sometimes it's real loud, sometimes it's soft. And right now your voice is blasting my eardrum.
Okay.
Well, I got as low as I can get it already. Are you there?
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, proceed.
Okay, okay, well, let's see. So I just going to start off by saying this is Tracy Wilson. I'm speaking with Lyle Mayfield. I'm in Champaign-Urbana, and he's in Greenville, Illinois. And we're talking about the Campus Folk Song Club, and this is part of the oral history project about the club. And it is July 18th, 2007. So my first question is, could you tell me a little bit about your background, where you're from, and your interests?
Well, I was born right here in Greenville. My parents separated and divorced when I was four, and my mother was the one that gave me most of my folk music.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up here and went off to the Navy when I was 17. Got interested in the printing trade. I worked overseas as a newspaper writer.
Mm-hmm.
And got interested in the printing trade. Came back to Greenville and became an apprentice printer. Moved around quite a bit and finally wound up in Champaign as day foreman of the Daily Illini for the University of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And it was there that I, by chance meeting, got to know Dr. Archie Green and became interested in the Folk Song Club and discovered that I was a folk singer and not a hillbilly musician.
Mm-hmm.
That sums it up pretty well. I spent most of my adult life as a printer, but in about 1969, I started writing a weekly column in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
It was an interest I always had, and I've developed into a writer.
Mm-hmm.
I still write that column for the local newspaper.
Oh, really? I read some of those pieces in a book that Fritz Plaus lent to me.
The Old Trees Die the Hardest?
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
That's my second book. I put the first one out in 1970s. I had one called I can't remember. You can't remember the name of my own book. Oh, Whatever Happened to Red Hot Jelly.
Ah.
But that column is in the second book, I think.
Okay, I see. Interesting.
You have another question?
So, my next question was how you became interested in traditional music. So it was through your mother, you said?
Well, my first memories of music, we lived, for a brief time, we lived south of Greenville in a rural community called Wisetown.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an old Edison wind-up phonograph. And I remember at the age of about 3.5 or 4, I learned how to crawl up on a chair and crank and operate that phonograph.
Mm-hmm.
And the first music that I learned, that I heard and learned, the first songs I learned to sing were songs of Vernon Dalhart.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, and my mother sang a lot of the old traditional mid-Victorian parlor ballads.
Mm, I see.
And but that is not my only interest in music, although it was my first interest was the old traditional ballads and tearjerkers. And, during World War II, as a teenager, I also became very interested in what we call pop music, the big band music, so I have a pretty wide scope in music. I like everything from what I call raw hillbilly to Mantovani.
Mm-hmm.
But most of my traditional music interest was created by my mother and then my peers. I have a lot of cousins in this area, and we all sang the old ballads. Of course, I remember when Jimmy Rogers, the old blue yodeler, was quite popular, and some of the first recordings that I listened to when I was in 7 or 8 or 9, 10 years old in that area were we lived close to a black family, and this old black grandma, we call her, had an old phonograph. It was a cylinder type phonograph, and she had recordings of Jimmy Rogers, the old blue yodeler, and so I became interested in what we call cowboy music or hillbilly music.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I returned from the service in 1948, I became quite interested in Eddie Arnold. He was my first love in country music, and so I've evolved into I have a large spectrum, as I said, of music that I like. I like everything from Uncle Dave Macon to Mantovani.
Mm-hmm. I see. So, you touched on this, but maybe you could say a little bit more about how you became involved with the Campus Folk Song Club.
Oh, that's that's one of the highlights of my life. I was day foreman at the Daily Illini there at the university. I was working in the print shop as a printer. I was a floorman, a type compositor. And Archie Green came into the shop one day, was going to have us print some posters for him. There was a folk artist coming to Greg Hall. We're going to perform there and do a concert for the CFC. And I didn't know anything about the CFC. I'd heard the name around campus, but didn't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I started questioning him about this fellow, about this music, and he sensed something, I guess, that I had more than just a passing interest in music. And he asked me, he said, do you sing and play? And I said, yeah, I play the guitar and several other instruments. He said, what kind of music do you play? And I said, well, I just do the old-timey stuff and some swing music, some big band music. And he said, well, why don't you come down to Greg Hall next Thursday and do a couple numbers for us at the Folk Song Club. And my answer was, kind of brought a grin to his face. I said, you don't want no hillbilly like me on folk music. And he said, well, what do you think folk music is? And I said, well, I guess Earl Ives and the Kingston Trio and stuff like that. And he said, well, what are some of the songs you sing? And I started naming some of the old tunes that my mother had taught me, like Two Babes in the Woods and Mary of the Wild Mower and Black Sheep and Give My Love to Nellie Jack. And he looked at me, he says, oh, you mean the child ballads?
Hmm.
And showing my total ignorance of what he was talking about, I said, oh, yeah, I learned them when I was a kid. He laughed, he kind of grinned, he didn't embarrass me. He said, and then he explained to me that about this fellow Childs that came over here from Britain and collected somewhere around 500 British ballads that had been transported orally to this country.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, come down next Thursday night, and said, we'll put you on the program. Well, this was in the 60s, was 62,
mm-hmm.
and that was the height of the hippie generation.
Right.
And I was afraid of what I would run into.
Mm-hmm.
And so I told my wife, we were performing together as a duo at the time, but I said, I'm not going to take you down there, we might run into a bunch of wild-eyed hippies, I'll go by myself and see what I run into. And so I went down, I did three numbers and got a tremendous reception and got to know Judy McCullum, Doyle Moore, and Fritz Klaus, several other people, and I had such a wonderful time. And so they invited us to come back the next week, and we did.
Mm-hmm.
And from there it just took off. And in the late 1963, they asked us to, early 1963, they asked Doris and I if we would perform on that record, Greenfield of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And from that chance meeting with Dr. Green, it just opened with a whole new chapter in our life. Matter of fact, it was, I call it the major turning point in our lives, musically and otherwise, because we made so many wonderful friends and got to know so many nice people and had so much fun. And we performed on that record with the five other people that are on there. And that was a stepping stone to get to meeting Jimmy Driftwood in Arkansas, and was a stepping stone to us performing at the Bicentennial Folk Festival in 1976.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to know Ralph Rensselaer at the Smithsonian, and we got to perform at the Old Town School of Folk Music in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And it opened a big door.
I see.
I could go on forever about how good that chance meeting with Archie Green was.
Uh-huh. Well, you mentioned when he first invited you to come perform, you were a little concerned about, you know, the people you might encounter. Can you just tell me what your first impressions of the club were, as best as you remember?
Do you want me to describe what happened to me the first night? That might be interesting.
Sure.
Well, when I went, I asked Dr. Green, or Archie, I don't call him Dr. Green, he's Archie.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Archie, what should I do? And he said, well, if you could do some of the old songs, that'd be good to do them. And then I said, well, I have a song that I've written about an incident in our community about a girl who was found frozen to death back in the early 1900s. I said, it'll be all right to do that. And he said, yeah, but explain that it isn't an original song, but it's about an actual event and written in the folk tradition. And I said, I'm also a big fan of Jimmy Driftwood. After I'd become a fan of Jimmy Driftwood after the Battle of New Orleans.
Hmm.
He said, well, it'd be okay to do one of Jimmy's old songs, too, if you want to do it. So I opened the program with this song that Jimmy's called the Slack Your Rope Hangman.
Mm-hmm.
It's off of one of his early records. And I got a nice polite applause. And then I said, now I'd like to do one that I wrote. It's about an actual event in our community, and it's based on folk type music. So I did this Ballad of Melissa, and I got a nice polite applause. And then I said, now I'd like to do the oldest song I know. It's Judy McCullough told me later it was about 400 years old. It's called Two Babes in the Woods. It's a very brief song, only three short verses. And the audience got kind of quiet, and I did this song, did it very simple the way my mother taught it to me, just with a straight three chords on the guitar. And after I finished, I was total silence. And I thought, boy, am I laid an egg. And the only way I can describe it, it seemed like 2 or 3 minutes, probably was only a few seconds. And the only way I can describe it, all hell broke loose.
Hmm.
Those kids, there were about 500 kids in that group, and they just went crazy over that one. They'd never heard that song before, I guess, and never heard anybody. And, you know, I went backstage, and I had tears in my eyes. I was so taken by it.
Hmm.
And I went backstage, and Judy McCullough come rushing out of the wings, and Doyle Moore and several others that I later on became very close friends. Judy says, I said, I don't understand what happened. She said, well, Lyle, for the first time in these kids' life, they've heard a real folk singer.
Hmm.
And I was just overwhelmed by it. It was just, and the kids, it was kind of an unusual thing happened. People started coming up to me and said, we usually get together after the folk sings, we have a jam session somewhere. And I said, well, go out to my house. Now, it's like 10 or 11 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them where I lived, and before I got home, 23 people had showed up at my house.
Oh.
And Doris didn't know what was going on with Nate Bray of the Bray Brothers. You heard of them?
Yes.
Nate introduced himself and said, Lyle sent us. And when I got home, there were 23 people waiting in my living room, and we sat and played music till 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, my.
And I can't say how beautiful the friendships that we established up there. It's a very, that time in Champaign, that 2 years we spent with those kids at the university, have a very special place in our heart.
Mm-hmm.
And matter of fact, we still have contact with several of them.
Hmm.
Preston Martin and his wife live in Plano, Texas. He was part of the club. Fritz Klaus.
Mm-hmm.
And John and Judy Monday from over in West Virginia, over in Chesapeake Bay, Virginia. And just dozens of people there. It just opened up a whole chapter of our life.
Mm-hmm.
It's very special to Doris and I.
Mm-hmm.
Before we go too much further,
uh-huh.
Tracy, as I told you, I'm a writer now.
Right.
And I've written quite a bit about the Campus Folk Song Club and our association with all these people. And if you would give me your mailing address, I would like to send you some of the stuff I've written there.
Oh, okay. Great. Yeah, that would be wonderful. Okay, so my next question kind of follows on this theme. What role do you think the club played at the U of I and in Central Illinois?
Say that slowly again. I didn't catch all of it.
Right. What role do you think the club played, the CFC played at the U of I and in Central Illinois?
Oh, very important. Very important. They awakened a lot of people and made a lot of people like Doris and I aware of what a treasure we had in our music.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was one of the nicest things that the students of the university ever did for Central Illinois. For example, I had a friend here in Bond County that was an old-time fiddler, Stella Elam. She's on the record with us.
Mm-hmm.
And Stella and I were like mother and son. She was very, I call her my musical mother. And she didn't have any, she wasn't totally aware of the value of her music. She's a wonderful, sweet, dear old lady, and she never attended school in the day of her life. She had a childhood illness. Her father wouldn't let her attend school. But she became one of the finest old-time fiddlers you could ever want to hear.
Wow.
And it awakened her interest and made her aware of the value of her music. And I think that more than anything else, it made Doris and I aware of the value of our folk music.
Mm-hmm.
Because after that, after our experience up at the University of Illinois, we became more involved in the preservation of folk music in Bond County when we came back here.
Mm-hmm.
And I got... so particularly interested that I even went out and did some field recordings, and I have about 30 hours of traditional music to the people that I interviewed over on deposit at the Indiana University.
Great. I'm glad to hear that.
I'm in the, approximately 30 hours I have over there. I've gone out, and we even started a folk festival down here in Greenville,
mm-hmm.
and had it for 7 years. And at one time we had 240 people in a group we organized called the Strings and Things Club.
Hmm.
And I think making people like Doris and I aware of what we had and of the value of it. I never had thought of country music or hillbilly music, as I call it.
Mm-hmm.
I had never thought of it as having any value, just something that people did for their own amusement.
Right.
But when we went to Washington in 1976, it really brought it home to Doris and I, and our youngest son went with us. We performed up there for a week at the we called it the Bicentennial Folk Festival. I think it was something, it went by another name, but
mm-hmm.
It was in Bicentennial year, and we represented Illinois folk music up there,
mm-hmm.
and we just made us aware of the value of it.
Right. And I don't know, since you came from Greenville, you weren't originally from here, what do you think local people thought of the club?
Oh, it was mixed. As I said, it was the hippie time.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the kids sported long hair, and I ran into, not a whole lot of it, but I ran into some resistance from people who, when I worked at the Daily Illini, we had a writer, Dave Young, and Roger Ebert was our editor when I worked. I knew Roger personally.
Mm-hmm.
And this Dave Young was a city-oriented type, and he was always making fun of our music, and he wrote a very derogatory article about being able to learn to play a guitar in 5 minutes, and none of those songs had any character quality to them or anything. And I took offense to it. I took umbrage with him, and I wrote a responsive article, and Roger Eater put it in the paper for me.
Do you know what year that was?
It would have been about 1963.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, I probably have a copy of the story somewhere.
Yeah, if you happen to have it and could send a copy, that would be great.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Tell me where to find it, maybe.
Well, it's in the Daily Illini.
Right.
If you have Daily Illini files, are you at the university now?
Yeah, I am. So if I knew when you wrote it, more or less, I could probably find it.
Probably late 63. We moved there in October of 62 and left there in May of 64.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Dave Young was the other writer's name. He went on to work in Chicago with Roger.
Mm-hmm.
But he wrote a very biting article. He was really making fun of our club and the foot stomping music that we played and stuff, and I took umbrage with it. I took offense at it, and then I responded to him. And I've been writing since 1946. When I was in the Navy, I was CB,
mm-hmm.
in World War II, and they sent me overseas. And when I got to overseas to Midway Island, out of a group of 85 of us that went over there, 81 of them were put in a powerhouse to work running steam boilers, and I was one of four lucky guys that were picked for something else, and I wound up as the editor of the station newspaper.
Mm, I see.
And I began writing in there, so I do know how to write. And so when I worked at the Daily Illini, and when Dave Young wrote that very derogatory article about our club, I had the ability to respond intelligently.
Mm-hmm.
And Roger Ebert, he got a big kick out of reading my article in response to Dave.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Dave went on to become a quality writer in Chicago, but he just had that big city boy attitude about our kind of music.
Right.
And the thing that I had going in my favor, I feel, was that I also had an understanding and a love of other types of music besides country and hillbilly and folk music, so I could compare and I could see the quality of the folk music. And I think the club, I think the people, for the most part, we were well received around Champaign, but I never got to know Champaign or Urbana that well. 2 years doesn't teach you about all the people, but
yeah.
I know that our neighbors all, of course, we were written up in the local paper, and I worked for the Champaign Urbana Courier for a while, too. And So for the most part, I think the area responded pretty well to the kids, and they were a nice bunch of people. It taught me the long hair doesn't tell anything about a person's character.
Okay.
When I had teenagers of my own, I learned to live with long hair.
Yeah. So do you remember what your friends and family thought of your involvement with the club?
Oh, they were all proud of us.
Mm-hmm.
Doris is an accomplished musician, too. She plays the guitar and the auto harp, and her family is all musical. Her father played the guitar, and my mother had passed away before I moved there. Mother never lived to see me achieve success with my music, but my family and Doris' family both were very proud of what we did, and especially when we went to Washington and the Riverside of the state at that bicentennial folk festival there.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, two things have brought my family recognition in Greenville. Quite frankly, I grew up as one of the poor kids in the county on the wrong side of the tracks.
Hmm.
And when I started playing music and got on the radio and did some radio work, and then also when I started writing my column, it gave me some recognition that I had never achieved before. And now we've been referred to as the first family of music in Greenville, which is, and all of our children play and sing.
Mm-hmm.
Our oldest son passed away 3 years ago.
I'm sorry to hear.
And he was an accomplished musician. The trouble was he played the kind of music I don't like, rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
But our youngest son has his own band, and my daughter married a classically trained musician. We have three grandsons that all play music. So it really, as I said, it was that opened the whole chapter in life. That the best part of our life became after we became aware of what our folk music heritage really was.
Mm-hmm. I see.
And I'm quite proud of. But truthfully, I'm as much or more proud of my writing than I am of my music. Although our music is a very important part of our life, and the fact that Doris and I worked together, we played together for almost 60 years.
Oh, wow.
And she's become my right arm of music, and about 30 or 40 years ago, we evolved into just a man and wife team rather than me playing out with other bands.
Mm-hmm.
And she's gotten to be an accomplished auto harpist, an accomplished guitar player, an accomplished singer. She's a fine singer.
Mm-hmm. Could you maybe just tell me a little bit more about Doris's background, too, since she's not here to tell me herself?
Doris is third generation German.
Uh-huh.
Over just west of Greenville, there's an area where there was heavy German settlement
mm-hmm.
in the 1800s. And her grandfather, two of her grandparents and two of her great-grandparents came directly here from overseas.
Mm.
And her father played music, plays the guitar and the fiddle and mandolin. He lived to be 94.
Wow.
And she had four sisters and two brothers. There were seven in the family. And all those kids were brought up singing and playing in church and at Boxville Schulten events. And her father played the guitar, and he'd take his five daughters out. And her younger brother also plays the guitar and the bass and sings. And she was raised with music. Of course, she's raised with a heavy German influence. A lot of the early songs she did, she doesn't speak or read or write German. Her father did.
Mm-hmm.
But she learned a lot of the old German songs that her father knew as a child. And he went to a bilingual school. But he was a very fine musician, and love music, and they were brought up same as I was. They were brought up on country music and the big band music of the 40s. Their dad loved the big swing band music. He used to listen to the Hit Parade on the old time radio.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's beyond your time, but but you know what it was.
Yeah, right. So yeah. Is Doris also from Greenville, or
no? She come from
just west of there,
north and west of here, about 20 or 30 mile little town called New Douglas.
Oh, okay.
She's from Bond County.
Uh-huh.
We're generally from the same area in South Central Illinois, but
mm-hmm.
she was brought more in a heavy German influence.
Right, I see. Interesting. And does she have other interests besides music that have been central?
Well, I have a lot of interests. We
uh-huh.
both paint.
Uh-huh.
Our house is full of paintings that Doris and I have done.
Oh.
And I craft in wood a little bit. Doris does crochet work. She makes hand crochets, things. And I do about 12 years before I retired, the printing trade was changing. So I knew how to plumb and wire and carpenter, so I, for 12 years I worked as Mr. Fix doing odd jobs around town and gave up the printing trade.
Mm-hmm.
And we built our own place. We took an old house, an old five-room house, and made it into a seven-room house and remodeled it completely. We did all the work ourselves. We did all the plumbing, all the wiring, all the carpentry work ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And my biggest interest right now is I'm 78.
Mm-hmm.
And my biggest interest right now is writing. I still write the column for the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really one of my first loves, is writing. I'm just as proud of that as I am of my music. We're about retired from music. We're not taking any bookings now anymore. We just sit around the house and play occasionally with our friends.
Mm-hmm.
And about 3 or 4 years ago, I took on an apprentice. I build musical instruments.
Oh, I see.
Build guitars and mandolins. And while I was at Champaign, I invented an instrument called the Gidolin.
Oh, yeah. Somebody mentioned that to me.
And then since we came back to Greenville, I've also invented another one called the Ginjo.
Hmm.
I combined a guitar, mandolin, and banjo into a 10-string instrument.
Hmm.
And about 3 or 4 years ago, I took on an apprentice. After our son died, this young man came in and was wanting to buy one of my homemade instruments. And I told him, I do not have any to sell. I only have my two original ones. I made about 100 or 150, something like that, but I'd given them or sold them.
Mm-hmm.
And so Martin Smith came to me and he said, well, I want one. I said, well, Marty, you know where you're going to get one is to help me build one. And I had 6 or 7 of them out in my shop that I had started and not completed.
Mm-hmm.
And we built him one, and it turned out to be one of the best ones we ever built.
Mm-hmm.
And he took it to his church. And used it. He was a song leader at his church, and he took it and played it at his church, and he came back a week later, and he said, let's finish the other 6. I got 2 more sold.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And so I made an agreement with him. I said, Marty, I said, well, you know, my oldest son's gone now. He's dead. And my youngest son is not interested in building instruments, neither are any of my grandsons. I said, I'll make a deal with you. I said, if you'll let me teach you what I know about building these instruments, I will turn all my tools and all my jigs and rigs and all my knowledge, I'll write everything down I can. And I said, if you'll be my apprentice, I said, well, I will turn the entire operation over to you as a gift, because he became like our son.
Hmm. That's
and
great.
Since then, we've built something like 35 or 40 instruments together.
Wow.
Now he's producing them on his own.
Mm-hmm.
And he's become quite knowledgeable, and he learned to play 5 different instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And the last few times that Doris and I have gone out to perform, he's played with us, performed with us on stage. He's from Arkansas. He knows the same old-time songs that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And we've kind of adopted him. He and his wife, they're like our son and daughter-in-law.
I'm glad to hear that you were able to pass on your knowledge. You know, that's great.
Well, that's what I wanted to do. And none of my descendants, all my descendants are musical, but none of them really took an interest in building
mm-hmm.
the instruments. And it's something I've been doing for 60 years, and
mm-hmm.
I wanted to pass it on to somebody, and Marty was a perfect person.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
And he's become part of our family. He's,
mm-hmm.
And he's here with us at least once or twice every week. He just lives a few blocks away, and we're mom and dad to him.
Mm-hmm. That's
great. And he and his wife are both like our kids. And it really makes me feel good that I was able to pass it. This is something, it's a knowledge that I acquired over a long period of making mistakes and doing it, redoing it. You know how
mm-hmm.
that goes.
How did you become involved in building instruments? Is it something you took up on your own?
Well, yeah, I just, I guess, I don't mean this egotistically, but I guess I'm a strongly creative person.
Mm-hmm.
I've always felt like I was, I'm not a religious fanatic, but I do believe that some of us are more blessed than others. Maybe just because maybe I was always had a creative mind, and there are a lot of environmental things that made me be like I am, but
mm-hmm.
I've always been a creative person. And 1949 or 1950, along about there, I got married in 50, so it would be about 1949. I built my first instrument just to see if I could do it, and it was successful.
Hmm.
And over the years, I've kind of fooled around, and I took up repairing instruments. People would come to me and By experimenting and by trial and error, I learned the things that you can do with an instrument, guitars and fiddles and banjos and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's mostly string instruments that I've worked with. And I began experimenting with ideas, and when we were at Champaign, I came up, my son came to me, my youngest son was 4 years old, a little under four, about three and a half. He said, "Dad, I want a guitar." And I said, "Well, I'm not going to let you have my D-28 Martin to play with." So I said, "I'll build you one." And I went out in the shed and I had some scraps, some plywood and some banjo parts and some mandolin parts. And I threw together this little eight-stringed instrument, a little wedge-shaped thing called a guitalin. When I strung it up, I thought, now, if I string that up with just a bunch of strings on it, he's going to run me nuts running around the house plunking on that, hitting discordant sounds, which I cannot stand. I'm a musician. Discordant sounds run me crazy. So I said, I'm going to tune it to an open chord.
Mm.
Well, when I did, he lost his instrument.
Mm.
But I later built him one.
Mm.
But I built about 100 to 150. I don't know exactly how many I've created. But anyway, the next week I took it down and played it for the Campus Folk Song Club.
Mm-hmm.
And they liked to went nuts over it. I played Wildwood Flower, the old Maybelle Carter song.
Yeah.
And Fritz and Nate Bray had to have one.
Mm.
And the Bray brothers used my original guitar on one of their early recordings.
Really interesting.
And he played Barbara Allen. I still have it's a little 45 RPM record. I still have a copy of it. And when they reissued some Bray brothers, music in about 5 years ago, they used that original recording on that.
Oh,
and then
exciting.
I started building these guitalins. Doyle Moore has number two.
Hmm.
You met Doyle, didn't you?
Yeah, I talked to him last month.
And he has number two, and I made one for a friend down here in Greenville, down near Greenville, down over Vandalia.
Mm-hmm.
And he tuned it differently.
Hmm.
Than I had tuned it. I tuned it to an open G chord. He tuned it to an open C chord.
Hmm.
Well, it gave me the idea, so I built an extra one for myself and wound up with five of them all tuned different ways.
Hmm.
Finally, I said, I only had eight strings, and I thought, like, I figured it out that if I would put 10 strings on it, I could get all the configurations and all the runs in on a 10-string instrument. I was playing on these five, and I would only have to carry one instrument when Doris and I went out to play.
Hmm.
But I designed it to look like a banjo, only had a wooden top, has 10 strings, and they're tuned, the bass strings are tuned in octaves like a 12-string guitar. And it proved to be the most successful thing I ever did. And we used it in most of our performances, like when we went to the Old Town School of Folk Music in Chicago. We took it up there and played it. And that's the thing that Marty Smith wanted one of, and that's the one he got, the first one that we built together.
Mm-hmm.
And we've sold several of those. Marty has. He's built, I don't know, I think we've built over 30 together. He's built 12 now by himself.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's a long evolution.
Right. I've got two more questions, and one of them I think you've already answered, so if you don't feel like you have much else to say, you can just tell me that. But the question is, how would you describe the impact that your involvement in the club had on you then and later in life?
How did it affect my life later?
Or at the time and later, yeah.
Well.
But I think you've already answered it, at least partly.
Let me sum it up this way. I'll try to be brief. It's hard for me to be brief. I love to talk. It opened a door that revealed a whole new vista. Maybe is that the proper word to use?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Because of that chance meeting with Dr. Green, half the people that we call friends today are resulted.
Mm-hmm.
My association with people like Judy McCullough, Doyle Moore, Fritz Plaus, John Schmidt, Preston Martin, Jimmy Driftwood, because of Doyle Moore introduced me to Jimmy Driftwood, and we took me down there to the first Arkansas Folk Festival, and we stayed at Jimmy's house. We got to go to the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C. in 1976 because of that. And to this day, half the people that we still associate with are a direct or indirect result of that performing at the club, getting to meet Archie Greene.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I say we owe half of our life to Archie Greene. There's no way of putting a value on it, because I'd say that at least half the people that we know as close friends today are a direct result of that chance meeting of Archie Greene.
Mm-hmm.
And it's had such a tremendous effect. And not just me, but my whole family, my children now even know these people and associate with them. And it was a major turning point in our life. I don't know how else to put it.
Okay. Well, that's stating it quite well, I think. And my last question is, did the political climate of the 1960s influence how you viewed the club?
It did until I made that first appearance,
mm-hmm.
until I met them one-on-one. And I'm a strongly conservative person. I'm a Republican, basically, but I voted for many Democrats. I'm not a yellow dog Republican, but but I'm a very conservative person. I believe in old line values.
Mm-hmm.
I was raised by a mother who was 40 years older than me. My mother was 40 when I was born.
Mm-hmm.
So my political values are strongly conservative.
Mm-hmm.
I'm technically, by technicality, I'm a veteran of World War II, although I never got in on the fighting, but I was in before the peace treaty was signed.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm trying to emphasize is that my values are based on things prior to World War II, the America prior to World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And I had strong feelings about the hippie generation. I'd read all the news reports and saw all the things in the... And I lived through the 60s, and that's when the things were really getting out of hand in the early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a very strong impression about it. But when I met some of these people one-on-one, I learned to judge a person one-on-one, not by what the news media
mm-hmm.
said about them. And I've worked in the news media all my life, so I have an inside appreciation of what the news media is all about.
Mm-hmm.
I work for daily newspapers, and I did some little radio work. I've been a radio announcer, and I've been around, and I won't get into that political aspect of it, but I have very strong opinions about the news media.
Mm-hmm.
But I had formed opinions about long-haired people, to put it in that context.
Right.
But when I went to the club and met these young people and saw the what they really were, I had. It changed my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those people that were long-haired hippies in the 60s to me are now very dear friends.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting. I don't have any other questions. Is there anything else you think it's important for people to know?
About folk music or?
Or about the club and, well, folk music too, I guess, in a broader context, yeah.
Well, I'll try to sum it up. I think the club served a very useful purpose. I think the term folk music has been corrupted.
Mm-hmm.
But these young people were trying to delve into what folk music really was. And I think sometimes they overemphasize the value of it. While I appreciate traditional music, and I use the word traditional more than I do folk,
mm-hmm.
because the word folk has been so corrupted. And for example, I heard a radio announcer one day make this statement that Bob Dylan was the greatest living folk songwriter, and that is the most ridiculous statement anyone can make, because no one writes folk music. Folk music happens.
Mm-hmm.
It evolves to oral tradition. And to say that someone could sit down and write a folk song. Now, I've written songs in the folk song vein.
Mm-hmm.
I've written songs like this one I wrote, The Ballad of Melissa.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wrote one called The Saddle Tramp. And I say that they're written in the folk music style, but I don't classify them as a folk music.
Mm-hmm.
And now I got straight off what I was talking about. But anyway, I think I made my point.
Okay. A couple other things just to touch on. I wanted to include some photographs back from the 60s of you and Doris playing. Would that be okay if I put them online?
Would you like some more?
If you have some more, that would be great.
I have about 60 photograph albums full of pictures.
Oh.
Doris and I, every time we take pictures, we put them in our album. We have all cataloged it.
Yeah, especially if you have any of the CFC events or anything like that, that would be great. But
Only thing I have is I have a few pictures that were taken during the time when we were recording Greenfield.
Mm-hmm, that would be great too, yeah.
Let me write that down.
Okay.
I'll just make a note, photos from 1962 to 1964.
And I'm also, to include your interview on the project on the internet, I'm going to need to get a consent form, so I was going to send that to you today.
That's fine.
Okay, so I'll send that to you. If you can send it back as soon as you can, because my position here ends next Thursday. If it comes after that, somebody else will get it and it'll be okay, but I just don't want it to come in too late so it gets lost or something.
I promise you, Tracy, if it comes, I'll get it back out next day.
Okay.
No, I need your mailing address.
Okay. Oh gosh. Well, I'll just send it with the form because I don't have it in front of me, and I only know my home address, and I'm going to be moving in about 2 weeks, so I don't want to give you that one.
Where is home for you?
Well, I'm originally from St. Genevieve, Missouri.
I know St. Genevieve. Mm-hmm. I have a cousin who lives there.
Oh, really? Who's that?
Eddie Bynes.
Eddie Bynes. Sounds kind of familiar.
His wife's name is Shirley, and she's my cousin.
My grandpa, he just passed away last month, but he probably would know who that is because he knows
everybody.
They've lived
down there about 30 or 40 years. Eddie worked for the big gas company that had a transport line across there, and he worked at the local gas, natural gas plant, pumping station down there.
Uh-huh.
And, But they're both from Greenville.
Oh, I see. My parents are still there, so they might know them.
I was going to ask you something, and I forgot. Go ahead.
I'm getting ready to move to Pennsylvania in a couple of weeks, so I'm moving kind of far away.
Are you graduating this year?
Well, I'm finished. I'm a postdoc, which I did my doctorate in Indiana and in folklore, and came here for a year to do this research project.
You went the same place Judy did.
Right.
Got her doctorate down there.
Right.
That one guy down there still teaching that she got so much trouble with.
Oh no, he passed away in the 80s.
What was his name? I remember Judy. He gave Judy a hard time.
Dorson, Richard Dorson.
Oh yeah.
Uh-huh.
Judy, you know, there is one that. Judy and Leon are two of the sweetest people. They're like family to us. And Judy made me more aware of things, and she taught me more about traditional music.
Mm-hmm.
And she and Leon spent a lot of time in our home. Well, a lot of those kids, we used to have 35 or 40 of them out for a Sunday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Made homemade ice cream, and Doris baked homemade bread.
Mm-hmm.
And but Judy and Leon and Doyle Moore and Fritz Plouth are three people that are just very, very special to us. If you talk to Judy again,
mm-hmm.
you tell her that I said hi, and we just love those people.
Okay, well, I'm getting ready to send her an email, so I'll mention that.
Tell her that Wild Doris said hi, but both of them, because they've spent a lot of time in our home, and and probably as much, next to Archie Green, I owe more to Judy McCullough.
Mm-hmm.
Doris, she would come in our home, and she would explain things to me, and I freely admit that my knowledge, my technical knowledge of folk music was pretty limited. Like I didn't know what a child ballad was.
Mm-hmm.
And Judy was very patient in teaching me things. And when I would ask a dumb question, she never made fun of me. Or she explained it, and she knew that I was really just seeking knowledge. And she's a wonderful teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just one of the sweetest ladies I've ever known. And we do, well, like I say, they're family.
Mm-hmm.
And but anyway, I didn't mean to get so wound up. I'm sorry.
No, this is great. I'm glad to get the chance to talk to you. It's too bad I wasn't able to come down. That would have been better.
I wish we could have you in our home and feed you on some of Doris's good homemade bread. Doris just stepped out. I can say this. Doris has been having some problems. The reason we put her on the phone, she's having memory problems.
I see.
And we're about 95% sure it is not Alzheimer's, but she's sometimes since Christmas, she's had a mini stroke, and it's affecting her memory problems.
I see. I'm sorry to hear that.
And that's one of the reasons we're not playing music. We were scheduled to play next Saturday and we've canceled out.
Mm.
Martin Smith's going to fill in for us.
Mm-hmm.
But Doris is, she's been my right arm and I won't go on stage without her.
Mm. I see.
But we've got 60 years of playing, almost 60 years of playing music together, so it's coming to an end, but I can still talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, listen, I'll take up a lot of your time, hon.
Well, thank you so much for spending some time talking with me, and I'll send out that form today then, okay?
Okay, and I will promise you as soon as it comes, I'll get it in a return mail. I'll spend some time looking for some pictures.
Okay.
And anything else, any writings? I wrote some stuff for the Auto Harp with the Club magazine.
Oh, really? Okay.
And you might be interested in some of my impressions of what happened. And it'll take a while to find all that stuff. I'll have to research my files.
Okay.
But I have everything organized and in files.
Okay, great. All right, well, thank you so much.
Uh-huh.
Take care.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.